Welcome to the PIO Podcast, a forum for all things public information related for police, fire, EMS, and local government. A place to learn, grow, and develop your public information skills. Your host, Robert Tornabene, has over 10 years of experience as a PIO and 27 years in law enforcement. Each episode, we will explore different aspects of the public information officer.
All right, so we are on today with Christy Hilton from the Elgin, Illinois Police Department, and Christy is the public information officer. Christy, so how did you get your start with the public as a public information officer with Elgin?
Well, I was hired 23 years ago as an analyst, and my career progressed into the role organically. In 2012, I started our social media for the department, and then by 2018, they decided to go ahead and just give me the PIO position.
So here's my question, because we're going to segue into this, because you guys do a lot of innovative stuff with social media. So how did it all come about, and give me some examples of some of the stuff you've done.
We had a homicide in 2012 that was pretty high profile, and we wanted to get the messaging out, try to reassure the community, and do so on one platform where people could go and get the information as it was becoming available rather than wait for the media. So that's where we started, and we've just continued to evolve that way. We don't send press releases to the news media. The media gets the information from our Facebook page the same time that our community does. I will, if it's a big story, text the two reporters for our area and let them know that there's information out there. But largely, they get the same information.
How has that been received with the reporters initially? Was that problematic?
Yeah, they didn't love it. They're still not real crazy about it. They prefer to have something sent to them in their email, and we're just not doing it.
I know they always would like a Word document instead of a PDF, because they always want to be able to cut and paste. And
it's okay for you to say that. I didn't want to be the one to say it.
Oh, no, I've heard it from them many times when I can't use an image. I want to cut and paste. I'm like, what? You don't really type your own stuff? You're a journalist. What's going on?
Yes, exactly.
So how many platforms do you guys have at Elgin?
We have Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and LinkedIn.
And I'm assuming the LinkedIn is more of a professional side, more for recruitment and the like?
We use it for recruiting and good news, but not a whole lot of activity on our LinkedIn page.
Are you a one-man operation then? A one-person operation?
Pretty much, yes. Unless I'm on vacation, I am the person doing it.
So there's those 2 a.m. phone calls.
Yes, because we put our shots fired information out in real time, regardless of what time of the day it is. So, yes.
Wow, that's always fun.
Yes.
They call you 2 o'clock, shots fired. You got to get up and you got to put something out, release basic information at that point.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. I should say, the pandemic has changed the way first responders do things, obviously. How has it impacted the way you as a public information officer does things?
Well, because I'm also over our community relations division, it's changed everything about how I do my job. We have really moved over into social media as being our outreach during the pandemic, and we provided show and tell type things for the department, a Facebook Live event with our SWAT team, even an exercise video with one of our SWAT tactical officers, one of the most built officers that we have. Yes.
I'm sure some of the soccer moms love that, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty popular, I will say. We had our evidence response team do a video. We had our We've done all kinds of things just trying to highlight what goes on inside the department. Our meetings with the community have been different. We will do Facebook Live or we'll do Zoom. Our academy had to change. There wasn't one aspect of my my job as PIO and community relations manager, or outreach manager, that didn't get changed.
So there's just complete overload then, because it all, and instead of it, you giving it to somebody to go out and do, now it falls to you to coordinate it and publish it and put it out.
Come up with ideas and what else can we do? Yes. And there's only so much, you know, Facebook that people want to look at.
Right, right. And they're staring at computers all day for work. So it makes it even harder.
Yes,
that's tough. Chief Lawley came, I saw that they're on Friday with the Fuzz and on one of the local radio stations there. How did that come about, and where did that whole thing come together?
Well, the radio station is a block away from the police department, so we have a very easy access to that, and then we have a very good relationship with the whole staff at the department. And I don't really know how long ago, it was somewhere in the 2000s that Lieutenant at the time Swoboda, our former chief, established that relationship and went out and started doing a weekly show of Friday with the Fuzz, just to highlight people and programs within the department. And she took that over when he retired and she was appointed the chief.
Has anybody else been on that, or is it just the chief?
She usually brings a guest with her. Like, I was on with her on Friday, and I think she's having me back again. It just depends on what's going on as to who she brings with her, if she goes by herself.
Okay. So Elgin's really a diverse community. And so language, you know, multiple languages are a common thing, particularly Spanish, I'm assuming. Yeah. How are you guys putting your information out? I know social media wise, I don't see a whole lot of Spanish stuff out on social media for you guys yet. Have you thought about maybe doing a social media platform that's Spanish based?
That's going to be changing for us. We just recently hired a Hispanic community outreach specialist. She reads, writes, and speaks Spanish. So she is helping us get information translated into Spanish, and we're hoping to just be able to, at the same time, put it out in both English and Spanish. It probably will not work with the media releases right away, because I'm certainly not going to ask her to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to do things. But if she happens to be around during the daytime when something comes up, we will be doing that. But she's really working hard to filter into the Hispanic networks in our community, because we are about, I want to say, 45% Hispanic. So it's really important that we get our messaging out.
Definitely.
Yeah. So she's doing a really good job. She's new. She's been there not even a month yet. So giving her a little bit of a chance. The pandemic kind of helps a little bit, because she's learning the inside operations before she really has to go full-fledged out into the community. But
that's obviously going to help with branding and stuff, and putting together Spanish language materials, handouts and things like that for you guys. That's extremely expensive to have done. So having somebody in-house that can do it, that's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. She's going to be, we think she's going to be the person. We do a video EPD Monday rundown, where we run through all the events that are coming up for the week. It was myself and another officer in English, and now she will be doing one in Spanish with a Hispanic officer.
That's awesome.
That's post-pandemic, when we actually have things to run down on a Monday.
Right, when you actually have events.
Yeah, right. Nothing to really talk about.
Crazy. Just unbelievable what this pandemic has done to us. I can't wait till we're all vaccinated.
Yeah.
So this is a great, this program that I'm going to talk about now is about your transparency dashboard. And I came across this, you had posted something on LinkedIn, I believe, and I saw it and I'm like, I have to talk to you about this. So give me some details. What was your involvement? What were the goals of this initiative that you guys came up with for this dashboard?
We've been wanting to put a dashboard together that highlights transparency, just giving information that people off in FOIA or are inquiring about. A lot of the information is, we have a perception issue in Elgin, where people think that our crime is a lot worse than it really is, because we're putting out information all the time. We're putting out our shots fired. And while it may not be any more or any less than we've had in the past, people just don't grasp that. Well, I just did the statistics for 2020 and we're at a 49-year low. and our population is more than doubled. So our crime rate is really, really not bad at all. I mean, any crime is bad, of course, but when we're looking over the time period, we're doing pretty good. So we wanted to get information out that right as soon as you open it up, there, the first thing that you're going to see is a real-time dispatch calls for service total. And right next to that is our use and show of force number for the year. And right next to that is our employee complaints. So you can see, like, at the end of the last year, we had about 70,000 calls for service, next to 115 response to resistance incidents, next to 34 employee complaints. Just trying to give them perception on how many calls we actually go to versus how many bad things they think, let's be honest, that officers are doing. So we're hoping to give them a little bit of perspective. And also, like, with those 34 complaints or internal affairs investigations, I want to say all but 11 of them were vehicle crashes that officers were involved in. So, I mean, it's a really small number, just trying to give it some perspective. But we wanted to take it further and let them have information available to them on how to get a hold of their beat officers, how to find out where the officers live. So there's an interactive component in that dashboard right away that lets them figure out what beat they live in and then which officers serve that area, whether it's a beat officer or one of our resident officers or a neighborhood officer or even their school resource officers. So there's information, there's pictures, there's phone numbers. So they can really just click into anything and see what they want to see relating to community policing.
So how have the officers taken to getting their email address and their phone number put out there for the public to reach out to them? How has that worked out for them?
It's really, they have, each officer has a department issued cell phone. So not going to their personal phones, which is one good step. And their email information was already out there. So it's not a big change, and I haven't had any complaints. I did have one officer tell me to change the one number that I did have published because it wasn't the same anymore. So they're making sure that their information is accurate too.
So the crime data that's there, how often is that information updated, and how has it made your job easier?
We have 7 crime call related dashboards that are pre-built. So you can click into it and one of them shows you the calls for service and that's updated. 4 of the dashboards are updated every 15 minutes. There's a direct interface between our records management system and our dashboard site. When I say records management, it's really our CAD data. Our CAD data is dumping into our records management system and we built the interface off of that data. There are some calls that don't go out, and we preface that. We say that there will be some calls that they're not going to see, and those would be victim-sensitive crimes or calls involving juveniles. They may not be fed up in the way. Also, calls that aren't mapped to an exact address aren't being sent out that way either, because this is a mapping program and there's no place for it to go, so we're just dropping those calls out. There's a listing of the calls in time order, so they can see from most recent to oldest. The data is housed out there for 18 months, so they can do searches by incident, all types of things. So that's one dashboard. Then we have one that shows burglary calls for service, one that shows traffic data. So a lot of times people are like, oh, I never see an officer in my area doing anything. So they can actually look and see, hey, have there been any traffic stops in my area? They can see where the crashes were. They can see where the general traffic complaints have been. So it's kind of helpful information for them too, to see where the officers are doing their traffic enforcement. And we have 3 dashboards that are manually, I say 3 dashboards that are manually updated. 2 of them are our shots fired and our homicides. And then the 3rd one is sex offenders, and sex offenders is, we're doing that through Offender Watch. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that. So that's sort of manual, but that's maintained by our special investigations group. So homicide data we have from 1971 all the way through 2020 or 21 if one were to happen now. 1971 through 1999 is cold case information only, with links to information about those cases that I can find on the internet. and 2000 forward is all homicides, regardless of status.
Wow, that's some great information. That's an amazing amount of information to be available in a single dashboard for the public to go to.
There's all the analytics behind it too, so they can get victim demographics of ages, sex, race, all of that information is out there, names. So obviously that's a big help to the media, and I already see them using it when they're doing stories about our shots fired. And mind you too, I keep talking about shots fired, we had 63 of them last year. So in comparison to some of the other communities around us, it's nothing, but it's a big deal. So our reporters are able to just jump in there, or if they want to know, hey, when was the last homicide, they can just go in there and find out for themselves. They're not having to call me. And it definitely, I already see it starting to cut down on phone calls.
That's kind of nice. Well, especially once they're aware of that platform, and it makes that's convenient for them, because they get those questions from editors and they go looking for them instead of having to wait for the callback from you.
Right.
Yeah. That's
the other two dashboards that they have out there, they're actually sections, are the response to resistance and all the analytics behind that for 2020 forward. We didn't go backwards because some of the methods of capturing that data have changed over the last couple of years and different things have been captured. So we just went with 2020 forward, but we have comprehensive statistics for like general things available from 2016 forward. But again, analytics behind the suspects, the officers, and all kinds of things. Now there is some information we didn't put out, like badge numbers, even the, trying to think if it, yeah, we don't have the badge numbers on those. We do have dates, we have locations and all that. Employee complaint ones, we did not put badge numbers out, nor did we put the dates, so that it wouldn't, if they really want that information, they're gonna have to file FOIA.
Okay. So,
as much as we could without not giving it out, if you know.
Okay.
So there's some categories of, like if it's a conduct complaint that's out there, that type of information is a little more generic.
Now, has the dashboard added any new challenges for you guys?
Just for me. Well, I say that, probably might as well just tell you now that I had put my retirement notice in, and I've got to figure out somebody who can help maintain this now that it's here.
Oh.
It's a challenge. But the interface itself is up and running and self-maintaining. There's a GIS person across the street from us who is making sure the script is running. He does his check daily and everything's been fine. The manual things that need to be updated, and there are a few things, it's just gonna have to be somebody that's taught how to do that. And before I can do that, we have to identify somebody. So, yeah.
There'll be the hunt for that person, huh?
Right. And then there's a couple other sections. We have employee good news. We decided we would put out there all the good things that the department does as well. And we have a recruiting section, so they can see the demographics of all of the applicants from 2016 forward by race, gender, and also what happened each step of the way from the application to the testing, to the list making, everything that happened all the way through there.
I'm assuming the names of the people are removed. It's just the demographic information.
Demographic information.
Well, yeah. That's still a ton of information. That's really it's amazingly transparent. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That one was a fun one to build, because they built it more like they called that a story map. This is all built on the ArcGIS hub. And I was able to really include a lot of narrative that gave a lot of history about our recruiting efforts and our changes in education plans and all kinds of things. So that's a good historical reference for them too, for our recruiting.
Wow, that's a great stuff. Let me see what else about the transparency dashboard. I think you jumped into everything, because you covered the contacting the beat officers and all that. That's awesome. Supervisors are on there too, correct?
Yep.
Okay. Well, a little bit of everything.
Yeah. Actually the mayor said, if you can't find it, then you're not looking, because pretty much anything you would need out there is.
And what's the web address of the transparency dashboard?
cityofelgin.org/EPD transparency.
Great. And I'll make sure I put that in the show notes so that the people can go look that up and see that when they hear the podcast, so they can actually see it in real time, because it is something. I played around in it for a couple hours, just going back and forth, and I still can't believe how much is in there. There are whole websites that don't have any as much as that's in those pages there that you guys have, and that's not even your department website. That's just one portion of information.
Yeah, it makes me happy that you found it user friendly and informative. So that's good, because I mean, I lived and breathed that project for months, and to me, it's, you know, a piece of cake, but it's really important to know how the user looks at it. So that's good.
Oh no, it was definitely very simple to use. I mean, I am definitely not computer illiterate. I'm not an expert, but it was very easy to work around and navigate and jump around. I had no problem in, you know, working through the, I don't think anybody would. Not at all. It's great stuff. All right, so let's change gears here a little bit. So we just almost into February. We just crossed January. So strategic communication plans are usually finalized around now, or they're put into play. Can you talk a little bit about your department's their objectives and their plan?
Just finishing our five-year plan up. We start 2021 through 2025. And we have it all drafted out. I'm just making the final changes on it, and we'll be having that out this week. And it's not just a communication plan, but it's a whole department vision of what we want to see accomplished in the next 5 years. Communication, obviously, it's a part of that, and we want to expand. Like we talked about earlier, our Hispanic outreach. We want to make sure our senior services are still getting the high attention that we had before. And expand into whatever other realms come up within the next 5 years. We just want to keep evaluating what's out there and what we could be doing better.
So in your communications plan, or I should say it's more a strategic plan as opposed to just general communications. How many people were involved in putting that together?
Myself and the chief, pretty much.
Okay.
I think she probably met with people and had some ideas on how to move forward with it. But yeah, that was the two of us working on it.
Well, then that's quite a big baby to put together, on top of at the same time putting your transparency dashboard together too.
Large projects.
Yeah, and then you're retiring too. So at the same time, you're
you know why, I'm tired.
Exactly, I could see that. So personally, what is your favorite go-to social media platform?
Facebook, just because it's so simple for me and I've been doing it for so long. It's just a quick, easy one for me to go to. I feel like Twitter is high maintenance. I don't like the tweet deck very much for setting up the tweets. I find it kind of cumbersome. Hopefully my plan was, before I even knew I was going to retire, I just had an opportunity that came up that I couldn't pass up. But my plan had been for the community outreach person to take over Twitter and start getting that beefed up more, because we have a connection to our CAD dispatch system that automatically pushes out all traffic incidents. So that was pretty much our only Twitter feed going, was just our traffic. Kind of a long story longer, we moved it, that feed, over to a joint Twitter feed between our PDFD. So some of our fire calls are going over with that too. So our PD one, it gets a little lonely unless I'm like, I'll go ahead and jump in there and throw some stuff out there.
It got a little lonely.
Then the Instagram, that's the same thing. Somebody wanted to get the Instagram platform up, but then once it was up, it's like, okay, can you do it? I'm like, oh, I didn't think that's what was going to happen when we got Instagram going, but that's what happened. So again, more things that need to be maintained. For me, Facebook is just easy,
I get it. I understand it. It's something you stick with, what you're most comfortable with. Absolutely. What kind of training did you get when you initially became a PIO?
I went to the FBI training that they have out at College of DuPage, and I remember the instructor's name.
Ross Rice?
I think that might be who it was.
Yeah, Ross was the first guy, the first training class I took when he was actually still with the FBI. Ross was the PIO for the Chicago office, and they used to run, he would run a 2.5 day course there, and I went through that back in 2010. And he literally would do basically what he's doing now. But then, he didn't take you guys down to a news station, did he?
No, he had news reporters come to us.
Okay, so we actually went to NBC with him and went through the entire thing, watching them go through their strategy planning for a day, and then watch them go through the whole broadcast. So it was kind of interesting from the inside perspective. But yeah, I've seen his presentation, part of it, at College of DuPage. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. And then I think a lot of it too is when you're working with your chief, you know their style and what they want to put out and how they want to do it. So that's probably the biggest training, was just on the job working with the chiefs and figuring out stylistically what they wanted to do.
And it's important because they're the head of the agency, they're the figurehead, and you got to understand what they want.
Right.
What is one of the one thing the listeners can take away from today's conversation that we're having?
I think that even if it's somebody who is just aspiring to be a PIO, just get your foot in the door to whatever agency it is that whether you're already in it or you want to get into it, take what you can get to get in, and then just really show them what you can do. I had no idea I would be a PIO at one point, but it was something that was interesting to me. I like writing. So I showed them what I could do with my writing. I started writing grants and racking those up for the department. And because I could write, then that's when they gave me the social media, and from the social media, it just graduated over into the PIO. I just kind of had I don't say that's not my job very often. Usually I'm willing to give it a shot and see what I can do with it. And I think that's what's really taken me through my career. It's just, don't be afraid to try things, and don't be afraid to ask to try things.
Good words of wisdom. Favorite binge-worthy television show?
It's on tonight. That's why I wanted to move the podcast to 4 o'clock, not 7 o'clock. I like the 90 Day Fiance garbage.
Okay. As my grandmother would call stuff like that, that's the trash you love to watch. That's the good stuff. Yes.
Exactly, that's what okay. It is.
Favorite food?
Sushi.
Okay. And anything else you'd like to share today?
No, I feel like I've been very blessed. I've had a wonderful career with the city. I love what I do. I'm going to miss it. So if anybody is interested, there's another thing too, to keep your eye open, because I do hear that. And I'm also offering to the department to help them with whatever transition they need, so somebody's not starting high and dry. And yeah, I mean, just get out there and make your mark on the world. It's a good time.
Very cool. Christy, thank you very much. It's Christy Hilton from the Elgin, Illinois Police Department. Thank you very much. If you guys get a chance to take a look at the transparency dashboard, it will be in the show notes.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Christy. Thank you for listening to the PIO podcast. That was Christy Hilton from the Elgin, Illinois Police Department. I know last week I said I was going to be talking about strategic communications, but I felt that Christy's talk about her transparency dashboard was something important to be discussed. So we switched gears, and we will be covering strategic communication plans next week. Following that, we will have a discussion with the PIO from Walton County, Florida, about brands and her work with the Walton County Sheriff's Department. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next time.